Hello and welcome to the Modern Fairy Sightings podcast, where we listen to people's fairy encounters. But take heed, we're not talking about winged Tinkerbells here. These are real fairies, real encounters that took people like you and I by surprise. Stay a while and hear their stories. My name is Jo Hickey Hall, and I'm a folklore researcher. Dear listener, I hope you're well. There is an enormous amount of soul-searching going on at the moment, and it does feel as if we're on the precipice of something. At times like this, we can feel completely uprooted and entirely lose our footing, falling into old habits to cope with grief and a sense of loss. I'm not suggesting we should judge ourselves if we catch ourselves doing that. It's incredibly hard right now. But it really will help to reach out towards what you know at a deep level will properly support you, what helps you to release without taking from you, whatever makes you feel a sense of real connection where you feel understood. And that might be a person or a group of people who accept you for who you are, or that might be a special place in nature. It could even be an old mantra that you've used previously that works, or prayer, artwork or poem that you draw upon at this time. Rather than getting tied up in the whys and wherefores, just trust that sense of what you need right now and do not compromise on refusing what you don't need. We need to say no when we need to say no. We all need to honour our grief right now. The other thing I'm noticing is how our ancestors seem to be reaching towards us, offering support in unexpected ways. And quite a few people I've spoken to have said they felt that presence. They are within us, of course, in our DNA, and at times like these, they also stand beside us. We think about what our previous generations have been through. You know, it makes sense that they're there, they know, they understand the suffering. So remain open to that. It's a source of support, and that will aid you at this time. I want to thank all members of the Curious Crew, past, present, as well as new members, for their generous and loving support. You are what makes this project what it is, and it's only because of you that it moves forwards. I appreciate your company, especially at this time and during this year, and your input, feedback, and suggestions have been invaluable. It has definitely taken a community to bring this podcast into being and to aid in its development. I'm looking forward to our crew chat on Tuesday this week with our guest from the last episode, Ryan, who will be sharing information about his ceremonial practices with us. So I'm really looking forward to that. If you can support the show, please do, and we look forward to welcoming you. There is one tier now, which is about the price of a coffee per month. And there is a free trial at the moment, so if you'd like to pop your head round the door and see what we're up to, you can do that. If you'd prefer to support in other ways, please share the episode with friends and give a rating, which really helps. Thank you. This episode is utterly beautiful and, for reasons which will become clear, also very sad. I am sharing this at this time because I think it needs to be heard. It's the story of a little boy who really felt alone and afraid for much of their childhood, but it was an otherworldly being that reached out to him and showed him love. And in his words, it changed his life and the way he saw the world. This is what this connection with these beings and with nature, and perhaps these are one and the same, can provide for us. I don't know why our natural connection has been systematically removed over the last few hundred years by those in positions of power, pushing what they saw as modernity, or whether this was intentional. But they could hardly have done a better job than to remove us from our land, our indigenous faiths, traditions and community structures, food production systems, natural creative ways of living in synchronicity with the season. It goes on and on and on. It's almost like the true essence of humanity has almost been squeezed out of us. And right now we can see and feel the consequences of all of that reaching ahead. At this point in time, though, we can decide to be free from all that that old world represents and to place our attention on what we want to create. We can each turn back to the land and to the beings that reside there and protect it and them. Acknowledge the deep knowing of what is right for us as individuals and communities, and we can help support each other regardless of differences. Refuse to fall for the illusion of division, but join together as fellow human beings, remembering who we are. We can remember what it is that we're here to do at this time on Earth, because I feel we all have a role to play, and we can step through this threshold hand in hand. I hope you enjoy this episode. On the full-length version on Patreon, we also hear our guest's description of his brother's terrifying encounter with an owl-like creature from Native American Seminole folklore. This took place in Thunder Lake in Oklahoma. And we hear of some further childhood encounters with otherworldly beings and altered states.
So I had to have been about 3 or 4 years old, because where we lived at the time was a little town in Oklahoma. It's where I was born, where I grew up. And we moved when I was, I didn't start kindergarten until I was 6, but I remember going to, you know, pre-K around 5 in a different town. And I do, you know, I always found it really interesting growing up hearing that other kids don't really remember under 6 years old, because I remember this experience and then even experiences before that. And I wasn't 5 years old when we lived in this town. So to kind of preface before the encounter, there was the house we lived in a neighborhood, and right, you know, in front of our house, there was the residential street. And to the left of us, there was an empty lot where a house should have been built, but wasn't. And then next to that lot, to the left as well, was, you know, the rest of the houses along that neighborhood. Now in this lot, this vacant lot, there was kind of a little sewer system, big enough to where even, you know, a 12-year-old could crawl into, because I'm the youngest of 5, and my 3 older brothers, my oldest brother is 9 years older than me, second oldest is 8 years older than me, and then my, you know, the closest brother to me is 5 years older than me. And so, you know, if I was about 3, my oldest brother was about 12. All 4 of us would play in this sewer system. We would collect horny toads, we collect frogs. I mean, the sewer system kind of, when it rained, would flood to the back of our house and the back of our neighborhood, where it was just this huge wooded area, and there were train tracks going back there. There's a creek back there. I mean, this was a really important, I just remember like running and catching baby frogs all the time. They were everywhere. There were just so many, there's so much wildlife everywhere. And at one particular instance, I remember my brother, older than me, that's closest to my age, we had gone deep into this tunnel, and which is, when I think back about this, I think, wow, I was definitely an old soul. I mean, I was 3 years old, and I had to tell my, you know, what is it, 8-year-old brother. We went so far into this tunnel that it actually branched out into this square, solid concrete room, where on each additional side, there were similar tunnels. And I told him, I said, if we go into that concrete room and go into those other tunnel systems, we might get lost. We need to go back.
Yeah.
So we, I know, at 3 years old too. So we crawl back, we crawl out. And unfortunately, there were a lot of times, you know, my parents were not around. And we were kind of left to our own devices. And I just remember wandering around as a 3-year-old collecting baby frogs. Just, and I'm not even joking. They were, you know, when like gnats or something will swarm around you, and there's just so many. There were so many baby frogs just jumping, and I would follow them as they jump away. And I remember at one point I ended up in front of like someone's front door, and you know, it was kind of some trouble. My mom was called and stuff, but yeah, I was just catching these baby frogs. But the encounter, that was all before. And the encounter was, it was something that has always stuck with me, because I know what I saw, and I know it wasn't human. And, you know, this was in, I was born in 1986, so this was 1989, 1990. Around that time, you know, a lot of horror movies, really big on makeup, costumes, and stuff. And when I was a kid, I was terrified of stuff like that. And I think a lot of it had to do with this experience. But I used to freak out. I still to this day can't watch horror movies, but I used to freak out. And my parents would always have to tell me, that's Hollywood. Don't worry, it's just Hollywood. Well, I'm sitting in my room, and I have the overhead light on. I'm 3 years old, and I'm just playing with my toys. And it's about, I mean, the sun's just starting to go down. So of course I was told to come inside. So immediately just went into my room, started playing with my toys. My window was open, because I mean, I'm not sure what season it was. I was too young to know, but it was a beautiful day outside. I remember that the weather was nice. And, in front of my window in particular, there was a flower bed that my dad had a green thumb, and he grew really beautiful flowers. And so I, you know, the screens were off of the windows because my brothers would often sneak out, and just my mom just got tired of putting them back on. So there was no screen on my window. The window is open, and my bedroom door is closed. So it's just me in my room, isolated, with no exit if I wanted to, except for the window. And I'm playing, and, you know, just like any normal child, I'm making my toys talk and, you know, just doing funny moves, karate stuff. And then I get this overwhelming feeling that I'm being watched. And, you know, of course I look up because I'm facing my window, and all I can see at first our eyes and a hat, and the skin was like forest green, dark green. And as it noticed that I recognized it, it raised its head above the windowsill, because at first it was just the eyes, the hat, and then the windowsill. And then it raised its head and was smiling. And I'm still staring at it, trying to figure out who is this kid in a costume, and how is that makeup so well? But as I stared closer, you know how our skin is actually layered?
Yeah.
And if you have fair skin, you can really tell. Well, there was a layer to it. I mean, it was so in-depth dark forest green that I started to freak out. I was frightened, and I thought, this is not normal. So I stand up because I'm getting ready to run to my door and just bolt out of my room. But as soon as I stand up, this thing's still smiling. It crawls into my window and reaches its hand out. And I noticed that in its hand, it had a plastic Easter egg, which to, you know, children here in, you know, the US, that's our Easter celebration. We hunt plastic Easter eggs. It's cleaner, it's not messy, and then it's easier to put toys inside of it. So immediately I noticed that this is a toy, and whatever this thing is it's trying to give me a toy. So I'm less frightened, and I say, well, I reach out and I grab it and I open it up, and inside is silly putty and a $1 bill. I'm immediately thankful, and I said, thanks. And it smiled at me and nodded, and then crawled out of my bedroom window over the flower bed, across my yard, and into the drainage ditch in the side of the street, which that's when it really made zero sense to me, because no, I couldn't even fit at that age into a drainage ditch.
Right. Yeah.
But you know what? I'm pretty short. Like, I'm about 5'2", 5'3". So I was really short as a 3-year-old. And this thing was about, I mean, it was taller than me. I'd want to say, you know, I by the inches, I would want to say it was about 4 feet tall.
Wow. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it was skinny. Its clothing also, that's what was weird too, because, you know, as I'm sitting there trying to figure it out, once it raised its head, its clothing looked like it was made of like animal leather and leaves. Like, I don't know how, but it was almost like it was fashioned with really strong leaves. I mean, this was just the most elaborate costume. And that's what didn't make sense in my head, is how a kid could find a costume like this and make its makeup that well. But my brothers were notorious for playing tricks on me. So after it crawled in the drainage ditch, I immediately went out of my room, and there in the kitchen were all three of my brothers.
Yeah.
And my mom. And I showed her the toy. My brothers didn't believe me. And you know, shortly after that, we moved. My mom said that was one of the many reasons why, because it just kind of freaked her out that something or someone was crawling into her youngest child's window, you know.
That's interesting. Yeah.
It had a lasting effect on me.
Yeah.
And, you know, as I got older, it became more mysterious, you know, and it didn't make sense to me how something that size could fit into a drainage ditch. And when I walk past drainage ditches to this day, I still just am baffled by it. But it disappeared into the side of the street, and I never saw it again. What's interesting is I never stopped talking about the story. And my oldest brother, he is actually a tattoo artist, and he, you know, after my mom passed, we talked about weird stuff, you know, that happened when we were younger, and he started to believe me. And, you know, he knows a lot of people that grew up in that neighborhood to this day. They all went to school together, and he just happened to be tattooing someone that they were talking about the neighborhood. He didn't tell him about this story, and that person, the guy he was tattooing, was saying, "Yeah, man, that neighborhood is really weird." He said, "You know, why do you say that?" And he said, "Well, don't make fun of me, but you know, the woods behind your house, the one you guys grew up in," he said, "I was playing outside one day and I heard some singing, and I thought it was some neighborhood kids playing like a game back behind the house in the woods by the creek." And he said, "Well, I followed the singing, and I saw," he was so afraid of being made fun of, he said, "I saw this thing that had green skin and just really weird clothing. And the hat was like a conical shaped hat, like a cone, you know?"
Yeah. Yeah.
"And, it's the same kind of hat that I saw. And what's really fascinating is it was like a tan, its clothing was like a very, you know, it was, what do you call that? I want to say like neutral tones. Like it was earthy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Earthy tones. I mean, it wasn't, yeah. Yeah. And the only real vibrant color was its skin. And he said, this thing was just skipping along, kind of dancing along the side of the creek, and it was singing, and it's like it knew he was there. Suddenly, and it turned around and they made eye contact, and he said he just took off running. Yeah. He didn't know what the hell it was. And I mean, he never went back to that part of the woods or the creek again. And my brother was just, my brother was laughing at him. And he said, my little brother saw that thing crawled in my little brother's room. And the guy just kind of got emotional. He didn't start like, you know, sobbing, but he got really teary-eyed because of the validation. And I remember, you know, going, well, my brother picked me up to go visit, and he said, "You'll never believe what I heard. You know, someone else from the neighborhood actually saw that thing too." And I mean, I was like, I do believe it, because that's, I mean, to this day, it was like the most remarkable thing that, I've ever experienced. And yeah.
It is just amazing. Thank you very much for sharing that story. And, you know, I can just imagine it. I can just feel the relief when you say, both for you as well, to hear back from your brother that, yeah, somebody else saw it. And then for this guy who has been questioning all these years what he saw, and then for somebody else to have seen what you saw. And you know, this is, I think this is only the second time I've heard of a being that has been seen independently by two different people over, I mean, I don't know how the time connects, like when that guy saw the being. Was it around the same time? It was around the same time, right?
Yeah, okay. It was around 1990. So I mean, it had to have been maybe a year, within 2 years of my experience.
Mm. Yeah. How old was he at the time? Was he kind of your brother's age then?
Yeah, he had to have been about between 10 or 12 years old.
Right. Yeah, so it's not even an experience that you might say is, you know, limited to much younger children, because I feel much younger children seem to be more open, just basically because they haven't been convinced yet that this is not possible.
Right.
They haven't been told it's not possible in a lot of cases. But for this little boy, and I guess he was quite familiar with the woods, and he would go and play in the woods. Because there seems to be, I don't know what you feel about this, because you will know more than I do, but do you feel that being was sort of familiar with the local kids, as in potentially had been observing them?
I do. I even got the impression that it had been observing me for a long time before it even made, you know, its presence known. It was a strange, it's like it was smiling at me like it knew me.
Yes. Did you feel like you knew it?
Not initially. as at the moment that I noticed it in the window, I was terrified. I mean, I didn't know, you know, if it was a prank. And then once it raised its head up, and I realized this is not a human child in a costume, this is something else. Once it crawled into the window, I did feel, and I don't know if it's just because it gave me a toy, I felt more comfortable. But you know, I don't really know if I felt like I knew it. As I got older, I feel like I did, but not right then. I was just so, you know, I was trying to solve it. Like, what is this mystery? And maybe it was my brothers. And when I ran out into the living room and they were all there, I realized that it really wasn't my brothers, even though as a 3-year-old, I still knew that not even I could fit into that drainage ditch. I just was searching for some kind of solution as to, you know, how that could be, how something could look so remarkably not human and fit into a physical space that just defies, you know, logic. Mm-hmm. So,
there's this connection with water, it seems, you know, down at the creek, which is where your brother's friend saw this being then, was when he was, is that right? He was down by the creek at the time. And then, you know, it's hopping into a drainage ditch. And I'm trying to think of a drainage ditch, what what that might look like over here. So at the side of the road, every so often, you've got a kind of hole next to the sort of just going underneath the pavement at the side of the road where water will be able to release down, you know, when it's been raining. Is that what you mean by drainage ditch?
Absolutely. A perfect example. Do you know the movie It?
Yeah. I was thinking about it because that, I think that was around 1990 as well.
Right. Which that also, yeah. After that experience, that scene was just released because, you know, that it talks to the child from the drainage ditch.
Yeah, that's right. That is terrifying.
And, you know, so that's the size of it, though. So it's like you've got the curb on the side of the road. Yeah, and then instead of it being just that cement block, there's that little cutout, rectangular cutout.
Yeah.
It's got to be no more than probably 5 inches, you know, maybe 6, maybe 7, depending on the size of the curb. But it's still not enough for a human being to fit.
No. And it would be designed that way as well, because you wouldn't want any
children,
anything to get stuck down there. So it sounds like there is somehow this water involved in where it is able to emanate from or enter into this realm from. And of course, that with that, there's this the connection with you being around the drainage ditch at the empty lot. Now, is that when you say drainage ditch, it was not drainage, sorry, drainage system. Is that because there was due to be a house there that never got built, and the underneath of the house had a drainage system that led into the main drainage system but had never been built on? Or was it the actual local drainage system that you could enter?
I think it was the actual local drainage system, because, I mean, this was about, I mean, it had to have been about, I mean, it was the size that a teenager would probably have to crouch down to enter through. So, I mean, the circumference of this actual, so this was more of a sewer tunnel in the lot between our houses.
Yeah.
And the drainage ditch was in front of our house in the residential street, but it obviously is connected to that main sewer tunnel entrance that we would play in on the lot in between the houses, the house that I lived in, and then the house to the other left of the lot. And yeah, I mean, this was the circumference was rather, I mean, it was large enough for probably a teenager to have to crouch down to enter, but could still enter. But an adult would really have to get on all fours to, but I mean, a kid, we ran and played in that thing all the time. I mean, that's where, you know, the biggest source of frogs and, you know, horny toads were, and crawdads and stuff. And, you know, you went pretty far into it until you came out into that square concrete kind of room. Mm. And I mean, it makes complete sense that it's connected to the drainage ditch. And, you know, what's really weird about that, you know, and this is just me kind of brainstorming, but I mean, I don't know what 3-year-old would know, but I do remember getting a very strange feeling going deeper inside that, like, kind of a being watched kind of feeling.
Yeah.
Because this was before the encounter.
Yeah. And you know, you're aware of that as a child. You do depend on instinct, because you haven't yet gone out into the world and, you know, gone through actual experiences. We you know, you do have that sense when things feel wrong. I mean, not always, but when you get a sense of something, you know about it.
Like danger. Yeah,
because it kind of hasn't been, maybe you could say, potentially it hasn't been socialized out of you yet as well, that you know, you obey what you're told, and you it's more that you're still in that space, especially, as you say, if things were tricky at home, then you are relying on your own sense of what is safe, what is not, what is right, you know, and all of that. You kind of, you have your own sort of self-direction, even from an early age. And, you know, what you were saying about early memories too, this is something else that I've heard, is that when people experience things at an early age, there's something about the memory that kicks in very early to enable them to remember details that other people might not necessarily be able to recall. So I think that's interesting too. But yeah, that this connection with the sort of subterranean places that this being may have been residing. And of course, there are many, if you look at the Cornish knockers and gnomes, and the idea that they live underground, that they have this subterranean existence, and that they often can come out through things like mine openings, caves, to our level, if you like, our realm. Right. But these are kind of thresholds, entrance points and exit points. And that goes way back, not only with fairy beings disappearing into hills and mounds, but and mountains, but also caves and sort of tunnel systems. And that's, you know, right up to the present day. So that is very, very interesting. The being itself, you mentioned his green face, his green skin, and what was his face like? Can you describe what his features were like?
Yeah, his eyes, I don't really remember them, you know, being different. Then the thing about his face is I had to stare at it hard, because there were times where there were human features, but I knew it wasn't human. Like its eyes, you could see the white of its eyes. Mm-hmm. They were bigger, very, you know, not more than the average human, but they were just like bigger eyes. I don't remember what color, you know, the eyes were. I just remember you could see the white. I was more fixated on the skin. And what was really fascinating, it didn't have a beard. It had pointy ears. They weren't like overly large. It didn't have a beard. It had dimples though. Right. And that's why I thought it was one of my brothers, because he and I are the only ones out of our siblings that have dimples. And he had dimples on both sides of his cheeks, you know, so when he was smiling, they were very clear. But at the same time, it had, you know, the smile wrinkles, like age wrinkles.
Yeah.
And that was also what was so difficult, you know, in trying to just say it was makeup. Because there were if that was a child in a costume, the quality was like literally Hollywood makeup artist style.
Yeah.
I mean, and even at that, it wasn't, Hollywood can't even make it that convincing, because like I said, the layers of, you know, as I stared at its face, you could just see that it went deeper, that the forest green went deep through the skin. It wasn't just makeup. It wasn't something that if you touched it, it would just brush off. And it was on the arms. And I remember the arms were kind of spindly. It didn't look malnourished. It had a little bit of a belly. Mm. And I remember it had pointy shoes.
Okay. What color were the shoes and the hat?
So the hat was like a tannish kind of earth. And the shoes were also kind of a tan earth. It had very like earth tone. But the, what was really strange, like, so would you call it like, it had like a tunic. Mm-hmm. And that was a more darker brown, but it all looked like it had been fashioned out of nature. I mean, it's just, like I say, I mean, this, if this were a costume, it, I don't know any parent that would have spent that much money to, you know, dress their kid up like that to crawl into another child's window just to give him a scare, you know?
Yeah. So made of its clothes being kind of made of nature. Yeah. Wow. It's really striking. It really is. Do you know much about the history of that place?
The history is pretty fascinating here. We have a lot. Now, I don't know how familiar you are really with United States history, but Oklahoma was kind of the stopping point for the Trail of Tears for the indigenous, Native Americans, and it was a really horrific tragedy what was done to them. And a lot of actually, literally, the town that I live in used to all be Indian burial ground.
Goodness me, wow.
There is a lot of really strange stuff in this town, and the town that this took place in before I moved to this town was just right next to it. They call it, what is it? Kind of a suburb of the other town, so they're literally right next door to each other. I mean, as far as miles go, probably about 10 miles away. It's not very far.
So you're still living only about 10 miles away.
Yes. And even to this day, back in 2015, I went and stayed at an old friend. So she's my age, her older sisters are my brother's age, and they all dated, when we were growing up, and it was her birthday, and I went and stayed her house. The whole entire layout design of that house is exactly like ours. And I actually slept in the her room, which was my old bedroom. Just similar, and it really creeped me out. Like I didn't sleep very well. It wasn't like a scared, it was just a very familiar, and I had the feeling of being watched again. But the area is, it's not that far away, and every time we drive, if I ever drive past that neighborhood, I have this kind of a longing, but also a little eerie kind of. It just had a really big impact on my life. But the history of this place, it's the state of Oklahoma, and there's actually a lake that was man-made. I'm not sure when it was probably about 70, maybe 80 years ago or more. It's a rather large lake, and there are a lot of weird things that go on around this lake. And one in particular was a experience that one of my brothers went through, and he's the meanest person I've ever met. Just a really tortured soul, just angry person. And one thing about him is he doesn't scare easy. And when this occurred, I had to have been about 7. We had already moved to the town that I live in now, away from that neighborhood. And he was out at that lake with some friends, and one of them happened to be, I'm not sure what tribe his family was affiliated with, but he was a Native American. And he the thing that they experienced, like, really shook my brother to the core. And for about 3 years, he wouldn't talk about it, but he came home with scratches on his back, like
Oh,
really deep
goodness.
scratches.
Oh, gosh.
I remember coming out of the living room and he was crying. I mean, he was about 16 or 15. And my mom was cleaning the wounds. And I remember just being kind of surprised that my meanest brother was in tears, and had been injured. So of course I'm curiously eavesdropping. But he only mentioned just a little bit of it, and he said he doesn't know what it was that attacked him, but he didn't want to talk about it. And it got to a point to where, as we got older, I kept kind of prying, and he'd just start crying. He's like, "I don't want to talk about it." He'd get mad, and then finally he opened up about it. When I was about 15, and it was an incredible story. And I actually went to school also with a couple of Native American people, and I kind of shared the story with them, and they've validated that it's a real thing across many different tribes. And they said that if your brother, which was really remarkable because he didn't know him, said if your brother saw that thing, he's a bad person.
Oh,
And
God.
they said, yeah, he's not a good person. But it made it just, it connected the dots in ways that, were just really strange because they didn't know him. But I can share the story with you if you'd like.
This section is available for all members of the Curious Crew who support on Patreon. Join us there for this and more bonus content. Patreon.com/the Modern Fairy Sightings Podcast. Just thinking back to the place where you grew up as well, the first house, you mentioned that that had been a Native American burial ground too. So I imagine that there's a lot of folklore surrounding. Well, is there any folklore surrounding?
You know, actually, it's more connected to the, and what's funny is it's just an imaginary line, but it seems like it's more concentrated into the town that I'm currently in. For instance, because of the lake, which is in the town, more in the country, kind of rural area of the town that I live in. They say, because we get a lot of tornadic weather through here, that, and it's true. I mean, I'm 37 years old and not, I mean, and if it, only recently does happen, it's very, very mild. Like it's enough to maybe just take a couple of shingles off of your roof, but this town does not get hit with tornadoes. Mm. And they say it's because of the burial ground and the lake. From a more scientific perspective, it's because of, you know, the geographic, you know, location, the valley, because of the Wichita Mountains. And so, I mean, you know, it could be both, you know, the superstition or the scientific. But what's funny is the town that this childhood experience happened, it gets pummeled with tornadoes, like just monstrous tornadoes. And I mean, to the point where I don't know, I will never live in that town, and I don't know why people do.
You can feel it.
Yeah. But this, you know, the thing that I encountered that crawled through my window, it I felt nothing but love from it. Mm-hmm. And like it was, you know, as I'm older, it just, because I do feel like it knew me, but I don't really know I don't really know if I felt like I knew it. I was more beside myself with just, what is this thing? But it seemed like it was the way it was smiling at me was like it was proud of me. And it just had to, it couldn't help but to make itself known. Like it had to meet me or something. And I've always struggled with self-esteem. I don't think I'm anything special, but it did have an impact on my life, because when, you know, I had very dark times as a child and a young adult, that was like one of the only things that really kind of kept my hope alive, because I thought, well, at least I'm special to whatever that thing was, you know? Just the way there was this warmth, it just overwhelming warmth.
I'm like so warmth. Glad that that was that was a positive thing for you. I'm really, you know, I really feel thankful that you had that experience, because it was obviously very much needed to know that you had this, I guess, kind of like someone looking out for you, sounds like. And I mean, what did you do with the putty and the dollar bill?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that I went and spent that dollar the next day on some candy or something. And I know that the putty probably ended up in like stuck and dried up somewhere. You know, maybe out in the yard or on a toy, or just ended up getting thrown away. My mom would often go through, you know, you probably know this because you're a parent. Yeah. You go through your children's toys and you're like, you are not playing with this anymore. So it's going in the trash or donation or something. And, but the, I remember I did have the plastic Easter egg for quite a while, and eventually it got donated. And I do remember being upset about that. But, you know, I feel like, you know, and I remember telling you this when I initially sent you the email about the encounter, I feel like that toy was more of just a way to keep me from being frightened. And the strangest thing is when I watched it go into the drainage ditch, the sun was not out. The sun had already set.
Right.
And, you know, as a child, your concept of time is blurry, but as an adult, I can tell you that I know the sun doesn't go down within a minute that fast. So I don't know.
Maybe. Do you think you had lost time? Is there a sense of that?
I do know that it was bright enough for me to see detail as it was outside my window. And then once it left my window, it was not that bright anymore. And that's all I really know. I don't know if I went somewhere. I feel like if I did, it was purposely wiped from my memory. I don't know if I was just given some really important pep talk that would come out subliminally in my life. Now, there were times after that where I would have really intense night terrors where even to this day, well, they don't happen anymore. They stopped when I was 16, but I would wake up and I felt like there was a presence in my room. And but you couldn't see it. But when I was a child and I would have these night terrors, I could see them. And my mom would always tell me that they terrified her because I would wake up and I would just start freaking out. I was screaming, and she said my eyes were like glassed over. And I've, you know, to as an adult, that's terrifying to think of a child's eyes like that. But she said, I mean, I was clearly awake, but she was like, she said I wasn't really there. Not like I was losing my mind or anything, but what was crazy is I remember being awake, but they just didn't see what I saw. And it didn't happen all the time. Sometimes I just wake up and I'd be terrified, but two particular instances, there were things in the room that they did not see. And one, and this was before, you know, I had really known much, because I didn't know what to call this. And now that I'm older, I feel silly even talking about it, because I think maybe it's because it sounds ridiculous, but also my brothers used to tease me about it. But I was always terrified to sleep in my room alone for multiple reasons. My brothers were really abusive, and I felt safer sleeping in my parents' room between my parents, and my dad hated it. My mom dealt with it. But, you know, I was like that until I was about 9 years old. But when I was about 6 years old, I woke up in the middle of the night and both of my parents were asleep on each side of me. And there were two, this sounds ridiculous. So there were two hairy beasts that were really tall at the edge of the bed. And what's even more bizarre is there was a bird feeder in between them. And in the bird feeder, it was a stone bird feeder, were dollar bills floating in water. And somehow in my head, I knew that if I was able to reach the water, they would go away. But every time I tried to reach to touch the water, they'd reach out to try to grab me. And so I'm freaking out in the bed and I'm telling my parents, you got to get them away. You got to get these beasts away. And they're like, there's nothing here. There's nothing in this room. And, you know, but what's strange is it's dark, but I could see them and they're growling at me. I mean, they were about probably 6 to 7 feet tall. And this is what sounds really ridiculous is now that I'm older, they remind me of like Sasquatch. It's just, I know it sounds outlandish, but it really was traumatizing to me as a kid. And then there was one other experience. And this was the same house. And this also was the same house where my brothers started dabbling with witchcraft. And my mom hated it. She hated when she found out they were doing that, she went apeshit. Excuse my language, but you know, she was not happy. But activity was really strange in this house. And one night I'm sitting on the couch and I was about 7, maybe 8, but I'm really sure it was about 7 years old. We always had dinner kind of late. So I had taken a nap. And I woke up, and this wasn't a dream because I remember vividly my brothers making fun of me as it was happening. And it went on for days. They actually, it took years for them to stop making fun of me about this. But I woke up, and where our TV and our entertainment center was sitting up against the wall, it all turned into a road. That whole wall, it's like, the best way to describe it is it's like the whole wall turned into a, not a TV screen, but like another dimension. I don't know, but it was a road and behind it were woods. And on this road, a man in all black pulled up on a motorcycle that was also black. And he had a helmet that was black. And I remember everything was shaking from the vibration of this motorcycle. And he turned it off, stepped through the wall, and stopped right in front of me. And I was terrified. I mean, there was this just feeling of darkness coming from whatever this was. And I didn't feel like it was a regular man because, I mean, for one, it came out of the wall, out of what turned into another place from the wall. And I'm freaking out. And I'm like, he's right there. He's right there. And I'm screaming. And my brother's like, what are you talking about? And I said, the man with the black motorcycle helmet. And I'm freaking out. And they just start cracking up and they're laughing so hard. And I'm crying. And this thing is staring down at me and then walks to the hallway into my brother's room. And it's the same room where they were dabbling with like witchcraft and stuff. So,
yeah.
But I didn't hear the end of that for years.
Oh, no. God, that's, I mean, it's just awful. And I've heard a lot from children. And I know I had this when I was little, particularly if I had a temperature. But at other times too, when I was playing and I got really, really deep into play, of the room suddenly just shooting away or becoming a completely different size or opening up and becoming something different. So I know that sense that you're talking about, that I never saw anything as vivid as you experienced. But it does seem to me like you are one of, you know, many, many of us who have the sight that it's much easier for you to be able to perceive these happenings and beings from spirit or wherever they exist. It's kind of a sense of, you know, your third eye being so open, if you want to put it like that, is another way to put it, that your third eye is so open and has always been open. And whether it's to do with this experience with the being as a child, and maybe if you did have some kind of communication with that being, perhaps that could explain what happened later. Or it could be that you just came into this world like this, as many, many of us have, and that you've, you know, remained open. Do you think, I mean, I was thinking about the fact that your mum left there, that first house, that one of the reasons was because of the experience that you said you'd had. And I just wonder, do you think that she ever saw anything in that house?
Not in that house, but she did, you know, before she passed, we talked about how strange the house was where I saw the man in the black motorcycle helmet and then the hairy beasts at the edge of the bed, the house where my brother's, you know, messed around with witchcraft. She saw the apparition of her, well, my sister, my oldest sibling is my sister, her husband's brother who passed away. And she said it wasn't clearly wasn't him. It was a spirit mocking him. I don't know.
Like a fetch.
Yeah. And it woke her up from the couch. And I remember that we didn't stay in that house very long after that, but she never told us why, you know. But later on, you know, after we discussed, it was shortly before she passed, we talked a lot about how weird that house was. And a lot of just, I never stayed there. I, whenever I got off of school, whenever I woke up for school, I mean, she would get up very early to go to work around 4 a.m. And I mean, I was like 6 years old, kindergarten, getting up, waking myself up, making myself oatmeal, running to the bus, knowing how to check time to know, turn off my cartoons, go to the bus stop. And whenever I would get home, the house and my brothers, I did not want to be around. You know, they weren't very good to me, to put it lightly. And so I would play in the woods. You know, the woods were like my playground, and I'm very lucky that nothing terrible happened to me, that I wasn't, you know, attacked by a wild animal or a snake or worse. I had this one spot in particular. It overlooked a lake, and I called it my wishing spot. And I just sit out there and wait until the sun went down, because I knew my mom would be home by then, and I just make wishes. And I just marvel at how tranquil the lake was, but I didn't feel comfortable being at that house, even if my brothers weren't there and it was just my father there. There's just very weird things about that house. But before she passed, she said that after that experience with my sister's husband's deceased brother, she started looking for new houses.
So she was open as well, it sounds like. And do you know what your ancestry is?
You know, it's very strange. My cousin did a, you know, ancestry test, but it's both related to Ireland and Ashkenazi Jew and then German. But we don't really know. So like in Ireland is actually a name for a short foot soldier.
Okay.
So like an Irish foot soldier. But yeah, it's, you know, very, very interesting. And then also I think, so German, Ashkenazi, and then I want to say Dutch, but I'm not positive. I've been meaning to do an ancestry, you know, test myself, but, you know, it's just, I mean, it's always kind of a plan, but then I always forget. So, but yeah, it's, I think mainly located now, my father's side, though, it's France and Germany. Mm-hmm. And Italy.
Right. Yeah. You know, in terms of your mum's side, and I don't know if that's your cousin is related to your mum's side, perhaps the Irish. There seems to be a lot of capacity for being able to see an experience with Irish ancestry for some reason. I don't understand why, but the fact that so many people that emigrated, particularly after, you know, the famines, even, we've ended up all over the world, and there were lots of people that are having these experiences. So, I mean, I think, you know, something to say is that having spirits around the home, I feel, is normal. However, when the location has held so much trauma of the people that were part of that land and its history and its use, and I think unless it's able to be brought to peace in some way, recompense, mm-hmm. What you're going to experience there can potentially be as intense as you say. I mean, I've heard from people before saying that awful things took place either in the home or at the hands of people that lived in that home, and the activity there has been very, very challenging for them until it was addressed. And it sounds to me like one of these cases where, you know, the portals are open on account of the location, but also the fact that your brothers were dabbling with things that they didn't understand. And maybe they were led to do that by the presences that were there. Maybe they were encouraged to do that in some way. You just don't know. It definitely encourages really challenging phenomena to take place. And when you've got children that are vulnerable and open to being caught in these sorts of situations, it can become really dangerous, because you can have situations where, you know, people get overcome by certain presences. Mm-hmm. And so I hope that someday, if that's possibly the case with what happened with your brother, I really hope that he does get help someday. And I'm so sorry to hear of how awful it must have been for you. I'm hearing that you found solace in nature, and that nature then, in the guise of this being, came and, you know, showed you love.
Yeah.
Showed you love acts. So there was this, and this is what happens if we have this relationship with nature. It's a two-way thing. Nature can reach out to us, which this being literally did, as much as we, you know, reach out to nature. So it you can achieve this sense of, even if it's not something that materializes in a humanoid type form, even if it's just that sense of peace and joy or love or gratefulness that we might receive from watching a sunset or bird when we're out in nature, replenishing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's funny you said bird. Past winter, and this has not ever happened, two mourning doves built a nest in my tree outside my window. And I don't know if you are familiar with their call. It's a whoo, 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 a distinct three.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It was really amazing because my mom, she had passed away 2016, November 14th. And since then, well, and then after she passed in November, 3 months later, I found out my father passed away. And I wasn't really in connection with him. He was a former Vietnam veteran. He was not even medically supposed to have kids. So he wasn't prepared for me. I mean, they used to always tell me that it's kind of mean, but that I never should have been born. And, you know, that I was a miracle, but then my brothers would leave the miracle part out and just tell me I shouldn't have been born, kind of, you know, cruelty. But, yeah. You know, I lost connection with my father when I was about 12, and he was pretty severe alcoholic, but I just had this disturbance. I lost my it was definitely an existential crisis after they passed. I felt untethered, and this last winter, whenever those birds appeared, it was the most peaceful sound. And I remember you know, I'd wake up to it, and I would actually kind of drift back off to sleep because it was so comforting. And I like to think that maybe that was, you know, sent by them, maybe. But I had this really, with both of my parents passing, and I've never experienced this. There was a lady that was like a mother to me in 2013. And when she passed, she was really good friends with my mom. I had a dream that she called me. And it was like we really had a conversation. She called to tell me that she loved me and she missed me. And I told her I loved her and missed her. And she told me I needed solidarity. But then she said, I have to go now. You're about to wake up. And I woke up, and it was just so crazy. I mean, it felt so real. Like, but then, like, that was the closest thing. But the real finale was my mother. When she passed, it was an accidental overdose. And I was the one that found her, and I was by myself. And when I was growing up, I would find her like that a lot. And so, you know, you would think that I would have been prepared, but you can never prepare yourself for something like that. And that night after, you know, the paramedics arrived, I hadn't been in contact with any of my siblings. Well, the one closest to me, off and on, he would come and visit her, but we still didn't get along because of his lifestyle choices. But the other three had no contact with them. And that night, my brother, the oldest brother, looked at me and said, "You're not staying here. You're coming home with me. And I don't care if we haven't talked in 8 years." Well, you know, that night went home with him. He lives out in the country, went out and looked up at the moon and, you know, just kind of grieved. But then the next night I came back home and I was just in a daze, you know. It was hard to be there. I tried my best to look after her and take care of her. And I just felt so many different, I felt like a failure. I didn't get to say goodbye. I woke up and she was just gone. And the devastation, I can't put into words. But she used to always say, and that friend of hers, it was also like a mother figure to me. They both used to always play this joke with each other. Like, whoever dies first, you have to come back and let me know there's an afterlife. And, you know, that friend never did that for mom, but she did it to me, almost like, you know, tell your mom. My mom, she loved watching ghost stories and stuff like that. And I always tell her, don't watch this stuff. It's creepy, you know? But that night when I came back home, I was just in this daze. And I remember I fell asleep in my room and I woke up to her saying my name. And I halfway woke up and she had this very distinct way of pronouncing her S's. It was almost kind of like a, and I wake up and I'm halfway awake. I hear it. And it's coming from my closet, which didn't have a closet door, which is strange, but I had a mirror, full-size mirror, and then a dresser, and then my clothes hanging. And it's pitch dark, and above my window, or above my bed, is a window, like a small little window. And I'm looking around, and I remember the horrible experience of finding her. Like, it's just, you know, a dream. And I lay back down, and I hear. And at that point, I'm wide awake. I'm, what is going on? She's gone. What is going on? And I'm looking around my room, terrified, like it's just a dream. And clear as day, wide awake. I took my covers and threw them over my head and faced the wall. I was terrified. The last time I saw my mom, she was deceased on the floor. And I didn't know how it was possible. But after that, like the next few days, I felt like an idiot. Like I should have responded, but I didn't know how to make sense of the fact that my mother, who had passed away, is in my room saying my name right now.
Yeah.
And the next night, which is even more just like my mom. And I mean, I know she knew she scared me by the time I faced the wall and threw the covers over my head. The next night, she used to always tell us this because she loved Fleetwood Mac and Stevie Nicks. She used to always say, whenever I pass away, I want you to play Landslide at my funeral, because that's how I feel about you children. You know, I built my life around you. And the next night, I woke up as if somebody took a radio and put it above the window above my bed, or in the window above my bed, playing Landslide. Oh. I woke up to Landslide playing, and I was so irate. I told my neighbors, I said, whoever was out there playing Landslide last night, that's cruel. You shouldn't. And they were like, why would we do that? That's, we don't even know your mom, you know, felt that way about that song. And so, I mean, it was kind of like her way of, you know, saying goodbye. And, you know, the last story I'll tell you is, my father, you know, I had no connection with him. And after she passed, I started looking for him. You know, I'd Google him. I'd try to find him. I really just needed, because one of the reasons he left was because of the cruelty of my brothers. We had different fathers. And I was his only child that he didn't even think he could have. Well, I couldn't find him. And so I kind of gave up around January. And then in March, in the middle of the night at 2 a.m., out of a deep sleep, I just woke up motivated to find him. It was just, I woke up and I was like, it's 2 a.m. and I'm looking for my dad on the floor next to my bed on the computer, you know, and in the dark with just the glow of the computer. And I'm looking and I'm looking, and then I find an obituary from 4 days previous. And I wait until 8 a.m. and I called the funeral home. And the lady said, I told her, I said, I think my father passed away and he's at your funeral home. She said, what are your grandparents' names? And I told her, she said, honey, I'm sorry, this is your father. And it was just in time for me to make it to his funeral, get in contact with my cousin. And he had a 21 gun salute. And it was just, I'm got chills just telling you. It was like, it was just, it was so crazy. Even my cousin was kind of weirded out. She's in her 60s and she's just like, how did you find out? You know, we were trying to find you and none of us could find you. Yeah. Wow. So just very bizarre.
You have such a clear connection. It sounds also as if, you know, between the realms, that you can very easily communicate with beings that have crossed over. and that you just hear very clearly. I mean, that whatever it is that stops us from seeing, hearing, experiencing, you don't have that barrier for whatever reason. And I wonder if it's also, you know, because of growing up around the burial ground, that you maybe, you know, even from a baby, from the word go, were just so used to being close to death, actually, people that had passed over, being born in a place that was a burial ground,
right,
that feels like home, that is normal. It doesn't explain why your brothers didn't kind of react in that way, but you know, we all come in with something to do, and I'm just wondering, with this immense pain that you have experienced, and to have to go through what you did, you know, finding your mother is just something that many of us can't even imagine having to cope with.
Yeah.
Such a difficult situation. It's just unthinkable of having to go through that. And it makes me wonder, you know, what are you doing in your life? Because it feels like you're an amazing person, and I feel like you've got something to do here. So what is it that you're doing?
Well, I do appreciate that, and I will say it's not something that I really embrace. It scares me, and I've never seen outside of the encounter that I had and those night terrors that I had, I've never seen a ghost. I guess, you know, I can hear things, but I don't, it scares me. I know I shouldn't be afraid, but really right now, you know, I grew up in poverty. My mom was married 3 times. And so my biggest goal is just trying to establish an incredible career where I am financially stable. I don't want to make an outrageous amount of money, but I want to have the kind of job security where I don't have to live in such a, the state of Oklahoma is politically not aligned to the kind of person I am. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the motivation of why I'm going to school for the degree that I'm going for right now is so that I can move out of Oklahoma and find, you know, unlimited job opportunities in better states that welcome someone like myself. So, and to be honest, sometimes I do find myself passionate and fascinated with certain facets of my studies, but having a well-rounded education is always a good thing, you know? So it kind of paves the way for different opportunities. But if you were to ask me, you know, what I really want to do, it would be to write. I've, as a child, nature and reading, that's how I escaped. And I have a very visual, I can read things and my mind, I just see it, you know, I can, and I love it. And it helped a lot with, you know, growing up in an abusive household and, you know, feeling abandoned a lot. I could open up a book and I wasn't alone anymore. You know, I know that I have stories that could really help people, but I think that my challenge is saying the right thing. You know, I don't want to say the wrong thing. I'm way too overanalytical with kryptonite for a writer.
I think you can just trust what you think and what you say. I really do, because it feels like you have access to something that not many people do. And I think you can trust that. Had you ever gone back to your hometown? Is there anywhere in that town that you feel you could go and sort of leave an offering for that being? Because what you were saying is that your wish would be to be financially secure and to mold your life to one which makes sense to you and that feels safe for you. And, you know, looking back at the being, he offered you money, putty, to mold whatever you wanted
right.
to. in your life, and this egg, this kind of protective membrane, if you like, within which you can mold what it is that you want to be doing. And I feel like that's significant. And I just wonder if there is, if you felt like you wanted to do this, don't do this if it's not kind of ringing true for you. But, you know, going back there in kind of recognition of that and just leaving something, it could be, I don't know, I wouldn't leave a plastic egg because obviously that's going to be not good for the environment, but something that represents that, you know, kind of, or a poem or a piece of writing. It doesn't have to be something physical. It can be something that you want to say even.
You know, maybe a crystal, maybe.
Or maybe a crystal. Yeah. And leaving that as an offering to say whatever it is you want to say, but also to aid that next step. You know, wherever you're, trust where you're going, you know, trust your trip, as we say, you know, trust your trip. And absolutely, you're enjoying your studies right now and you're getting really into that. So who knows where that will lead. But again, if there's something that you really want to be doing alongside that, that might then grow into, you know, that's what you do sort of thing. You could end up doing both things. And maybe the job will end up giving you the security to write. You know, it happens in different ways, but what I'm saying is just trust that. That's it. Perhaps by reaching out in acknowledgement and, you know, to this being, maybe there's some kind of reconnection that can happen, or just by doing that, it might just help you going forward.
That's an incredible idea. I definitely am open to it. Now, my one thing I know is my brother and I, we, you know, after talking about my experience and then learning about his friend's experience that grew up there also, we one time were driving around because he lives out in the country and he often shops in that town. That town, he shops and quite frequently. And we were driving. And he said, "Hey, do you want to go through our old neighborhood and look at that house?" And it's like, "Absolutely." And so we drove past it. And one thing I noticed is that, well, there's a bunch of shopping centers everywhere now surrounding that neighborhood. And in that lot, I don't know how, I guess that they cut out the connection of that sewer tunnel, but there's a house built on that lot now. That was in between. So it would have to be a way. I'm pretty sure the woods behind the house are still there because of the train track that runs through them. It would have been quite difficult for them to, you know, take up that train track and,
Oh, that's interesting too. So there was a train track there.
Yes. So there's a creek, a train track, and then that sewer system. Yeah.
Blimey. There's something about train tracks too. There's something about the movement, potentially. We don't really know, to be honest, but there's an awful lot of encounters that happen on train tracks. I'm talking Sasquatch. I'm talking big, huge animals like panthers and black dogs, you know, gigantic animals, fairy beings, spirits. There's something about, potentially a bit like a river, body of water, of a flow, but that vibration. Movement... Yeah, even when it's a disused train track, there's still an awful lot of activity that happens around train tracks. So that kind of just adds to it, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, it is a hotbed. All of it, all of, you know, from what you just added, that it's all there, the water, the, you know, the creek, the sewer tunnels, the entrance to a subterranean realm, and then, you know, the woods and then the train tracks.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's just like tick, tick, tick. Everything is there. Yeah. What a potent place. But then I think, I feel like there's going to be something that you're going to do later on at some point. I just feel like, you know, some people say that, they do remember, and I have spoken about this before, but they do remember going off as kids and being taught something. And when you talked about potentially losing time in the bedroom there, potentially, it just reminded me of that again, that there are some people who as kids were prepared for something later in life. And maybe it's this time, maybe it's a later time, we don't know. but that information and maybe even teaching was given at that time. I mean, I don't know to say any more than that, really. I don't know if that kind of resonates with you in any way. And I feel that there's going to be something that you're going to do. I just have a feeling about it. So you're going to have to tell me how you're getting on and let me know kind of how things unfurl for you, because, you know, you deserve all the happiness and to feel, yeah, loved and happy in your life. And I really see you heading that direction, which it feels good to hear that you're in a really good place now. And who knows why and how these things take place, but it sounds like you've been really in the thick of it all. So it must mean something. It must be for some reason. I'm feeling it must be some kind of meaning to this. And only you will know that, of course. It's not something that anyone else can tell you.
That makes sense. And I will definitely update you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a pleasure, definitely, to share these experiences with you. It's been a, you know, not to be a fanboy, but it's been pretty much, you know, I've admired your work and the interviews you've done with other people. And I was always curious what you would think about, you know, my experiences. And so it's just kind of unreal, you know, it just feels like a dream to be sharing it with you. I mean,
I'm absolutely honored to meet you and speak with you. And
likewise.
It's great to be in contact. So thank you. And we'll remain
absolutely
in contact.
Welcome. Yes, yeah. I definitely will. Thank you.
I am sure you're as moved as I am to hear these experiences, and a huge thanks goes to our guest and being so open. I feel like this is an incredibly important share, actually, as it gives us an understanding of the potential of relationships between us humans and these beings. In my opinion, I think one of the most fascinating parts of our guest's main experience is that the gnome, or green-skinned being, whatever he was, entered this boy's bedroom via the window. He was on the outside to begin with, sort of being quite tentative about it, but then there was something between it and this little boy that between them, there's this kind of sense of connection, and then it climbs in the window and hands him the egg, which, as I say at the end, feels very symbolic and perhaps was a blessing that has always remained with him. As if this being knew of his situation and saw his suffering. But the crossing of that threshold is an unusual one. And I started to think about that, and I realized that perhaps, in fact, this had been a two-way thing. That's how it makes sense to me. And, oh, you know, what do I know? I'm just here the same as you, listening to these stories, seeing where the understanding flows. As we heard, this little boy had been entering the sewer system to play. So he had entered the subterranean realm, the realm of this being, first. And he reported feeling watched the time that they entered too deeply, and it felt like they'd passed some kind of point where it was no longer safe. So he felt that kind of membrane that we feel when we know we're entering into something. We might not be able to see it, but we can feel it. And he felt it. They should turn back. And yes, you could say, okay, well, you know, it's a dangerous situation, they could have got lost, but we all know when we've been, maybe it's in the woods, or we've been in a pathway or somewhere where suddenly something shifts and we know something shifted and we know we need to maybe back off, or that certainly we've stepped into something that feels different. So these underground spaces are places that humans don't usually enter. We feel frightened to do that, at least these days. But it puts me in mind of the relationship between miners and Cornish knockers, or Tommy knockers as they're known in the US. The offerings left to these beings, who in turn aided the miners, warning them of impending danger or guiding them to untapped coal seams. It was a two-way interaction between human being and otherworldly being, or subterranean being. There is something important here which reminds us about the way that we can reach out to nature, and nature will respond. It may actually reach back in to us, call to us, provide a safe space, or even guide us, if we listen. Do not underestimate the power of this. This is why we need to do all we can to protect green spaces where we live, and on a greater level as well, elsewhere in the world, where we can see that they are under threat. Now, I feel this is so important, we're going to be returning to this theme in this month's Patreon bonus for a bit of a deep dive on fairies, thresholds, and the communing which can take place between humans and these beings. So I'm going to have a look at some other encounters that we can perhaps view through this lens now that we've heard about this particular encounter. The second experience is extremely shocking. I feel so much for this teenage boy who, whilst by our guest's account, was a harmful person to be around, and how awful for that person to be in your family, because you, as a child, really, we don't usually have a choice who we're around. That's something we can do as adults, and something of Martin Brofman once said that some people are best loved from a distance. And while that might sound quite, I don't know, maybe that might sound heartless to some people, when you need to protect yourself from somebody that is behaving in a toxic way that is damaging to you, you can still love them, but it's actually safer for you to do that while you're not sharing space with them or even having to visit them, you know, particularly coming into this time of year around Christmas. It's a bit of a joke sometimes if we've got to spend time with people that we don't necessarily want to, but then there's other situations where it just damages your well-being and it's time to say, no, that's not what I want to do actually. I love you, but actually I'd be much happier doing this other thing instead. So I really feel for everyone in this situation that was described. Here we have this teenage boy who, it does sound as if he was a product of an incredibly broken and damaging home situation, which my guest explained was multi-generational. It just leads me back again to thinking about how broken our modern way of life is. Sadly, in this situation, it starts with the horror of abuse that took place towards Native Americans, the lasting memory of which still lies within that land where the family lived. The historical act of colonialization and the ethnic cleansing itself examples our loss of humanity, and we continue to do this to each other, maybe because we've forgotten who we are. We are human beings living on a beautiful planet that provides everything we need, and yet we kill and maim each other and the land itself. We have to ask ourselves, who and what purpose do these acts serve? As we have a location for that second experience, we will also return for a later exclusive bonus to explore the folklore surrounding this creature of the Native American Seminole folklore, which will remain unnamed here, as I understand that it is only the elders or medicine people who are allowed to speak its name, and it may actually be a danger to speak of it directly. So we will respect that. Thank you for listening to this episode. Listening to this share has made me want to stay very still. I felt it move through me and I felt it bring some realizations, so I'd love to hear what it meant to you too, especially at this time. I hope it helps you to know that these beings do exist, whether you've had an experience or not. This world has held many secrets within, but it seems like we're entering a new age of understanding. Let's continue sharing ideas and opening to that new era, not a path of modernization, but the track that leads us back to our humanity. Trust your instinct when and how to take that first step. Feel the love surrounding you and always remain curious.